You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we take you up to Nats, Mets. Nats on deck coming up 12:40. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler, and then they'll take you home on this Sunday afternoon as the Nationals look to avoid the sweep at Citi Field in New York after two heartbreaking, crushing losses last night. 4-3 to the New York Mets, and Sam Fortier is there covering the series for the Washington Post and WashingtonPost.com, and he's with us here on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Sam, thanks for your time. It's Chris Russell here, Tom Lavero as well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, I think I'm doing a little better than the Nationals right now.
I would say so, absolutely. And you can follow, by the way, Sam's coverage as well, at Sam 4, the number 4, TR, at Sam 4, TR. So there are losses, there are games, there are wins, and theoretically everything is one of 162. But we all know that there are ones that hurt more and that there are ones that count more, whether it's a win or a loss. Did last night for you feel like extra important because of what happened on Friday night, and how did the Nationals handle that in the clubhouse?
I actually think that last night was more important because of what's happening today. You put yourself in a position, if you're the Nationals, to avoid a sweep, you have to beat the reigning NL Cy Young Award winner in Jacob DeGrom, and that's a very difficult proposition, especially at a time when the Mets are surging and you know, you're a half game up on them in the wild card. You need to do all you can to kind of keep them at bay. And to come here and get swept, or at least to put yourself in a position where it's a difficult proposition for you to not get swept, I think that's the biggest takeaway from last night's loss.
Sam, did you used to cover surfing in San Diego?
I did not. It's funny you ask.
Well, because I'm reading the response to one of your comments from one of your followers that basically disagreed with your assertion about whether or not this was a game. I guess this was from Friday night. This wasn't necessarily the game the Nationals needed. He wasn't particularly pleased with that assessment, was he?
No, that was actually an email I got this morning from last night's team story, and I pointed out, I said, you know, if you take these games individually, I mean, you know, a game in August counts, you know, the same as a game in April, like all the cliches, right? I think, you know, obviously the way you lose that is important, but just losing this one game doesn't doom you. It's not as if you know, the magic number is getting to the single digits here. That was all my point was, but you're right. At least one Nationals fan did not agree with my assessment.
I thought that was pretty funny. And look, part of the problem, Sam, is baseball fans today, and particularly in Washington, they view baseball like they view football. And in football, every game is important. So every game is important in baseball. It's like a life and death situation, and they don't understand the concept. You know, as bad as this has been, and as bad as the bullpen has been, the same night the Atlanta Braves blew a 3-run lead to the Miami Marlins, wound up losing the game in 10 innings, 7-6, which leads me to the conclusion that if the Nationals have a lousy bullpen, they're in a pretty big club. Nobody seems to have a good bullpen.
Right. I think this is something you've seen across baseball, not even just in the NL East, but, you know, I think the Boston Red Sox jump out and a lot of other teams that were in the bullpen market, the Oakland Athletics, during the trade deadline. I think, obviously, that is a big problem. And sort of what you're saying about the National League East, the Nationals obviously addressed this at the trade deadline. I think that they are better than they've shown the last two nights, whatever Sean Doolittle demons are with the New York Mets. I mean, that's sort of, you know, tough to say. But and also, I think Dave Martinez, the manager, is open to change when asked about, you know, what the eighth inning role would look like going forward. If Fernando Rodney would still be his eighth inning guy, he sort of was a little noncommittal, and he said, well, at least now I got options. So that, to me, says you might see Daniel Hudson there. You might see Hunter Strickland get a shot there. But obviously, in terms of the bullpen, I think the Nationals understand that was – the thing that was threatening this season. They addressed it, and I think you might see some pieces shuffled around to try to optimize what they have.
Yeah, quite honestly, I mean, this is my opinion. There's no reason for Fernando Rodney to be out there in every eighth inning high leverage spot. Not when you have, like you said, Hunter Strickland and Daniel Hudson. And I know Hudson gave up the go-ahead sack fly last night, but the damage was created, A, by fielding, and then B, by Rodney. Sam Fortier from the Washington Post joining us, WashingtonPost.com, with us from Citi Field in New York. So I get you mentioned Doolittle and the demons against the Mets. It sounds like you fully think, like, if there's a save opportunity today, Doolittle, especially not pitching last night, will get that opportunity. Do you think it's more than just the Mets? I mean, it really seems like for the last 2.5 months, like, almost every appearance, Doolittle is flirting with danger. And usually he can wiggle out of it. Maybe I'm asking for too much. I don't know. But it seems like Doolittle has kind of struggled in more appearances to get out of stuff. And is that more because he's a one-pitch primary pitcher?
I don't think that it's because he's a one-pitch primary pitcher. He's kind of made his career off that fastball. I think there are certainly legitimate, inflection points that you can look at with Doolittle. I mean, he's on a career high for appearances, which is 63. He's at, I believe, 49 right now. But his velo is down. His fastball, which was 93, 94, is now at 91, 92. And he said the other night, after Friday, that he was surprised to see low numbers like that. But he stressed that he does not think that this is workload related. He doesn't think, he had several days off before that. I mean, he is pretty adamant that he just didn't like how the ball was coming out of his hands, and he thought he might be overcompensated in that regard. I definitely do think that Sean Doolittle, if there's a save opportunity this afternoon, he will be the one out of the pen. Dave Martinez trusts him. He said, that's his guy. And Dave Martinez, as we know, if nothing else, is a believer in his guys. So I think Sean Doolittle, I mean, against the Mets, he has a 15 ERA. He's 1-for-4 save opportunities. Against everyone else, 2.06 ERA, 24-for-26. I think this might be a Mets-specific problem.
What about the crowds at Citi Field? What's the atmosphere been like?
The atmosphere has honestly been, for games that I've been at, probably some of the best, if not the best, of the entire season. Citi Field is on its feet, for for a 1-2 count in the bottom of the first inning. The top of the first inning, when their pitcher has a chance to get out of it, they've been remarkable. And several Nationals, including Patrick Corbin and Steven Strasburg, the game two starters, they both mentioned that it's been an incredible atmosphere. And Steven Strasburg even said, and this is a direct quote, "I hope all the fans, meaning D.C. fans, are watching the game because it gets into crunch time and those things really carry teams and get us to the next level."
Sam Fortier from the Washington Post and WashingtonPost.com joining us from Citi Field. In New York. Again, make sure you read him in the Washington Post, WashingtonPost.com, but also follow him on Twitter at Sam4TR, at Sam4TR. The atmosphere, one thing, this ball club right now is getting some good starting pitching overall. I know Strasburg and Corbin had some hiccups last weekend in Phoenix, but good other than that. And Soto is just tattooing everything. We know how good Rendon has been. Trey has been pretty good. Like, overall, it doesn't seem like right now, after these two losses, there's a lot to feel good about. But yet, then that was preceded by a 3-game sweep in San Francisco and a team that had crawled back to .500. How would you evaluate, I guess, the mood, the atmosphere, the feeling that you have and maybe the team has as you read out the results of these games?
The sense in the clubhouse is not panic mode. I think, they understand. They feel like they've played good baseball for the last 2 days. Dave Martinez at the top certainly sets that message. And I think if the important context to this is, if let's go back to late May when the Nationals were swept in a 4-game series here. That was not good baseball. And I think that even people in the clubhouse have said that there wasn't urgency at that point. Afterwards, it was sort of, an embarrassed feeling about, hey, we're a better team than this. This is different. This time is different because they do feel like they're playing good baseball. And other than a throwing error by Trey Turner last night and, two aberrational innings, from relievers that they usually trust, that's really the thing that's sinking them here. And I think they're seeing this as more of a, that baseball against one of the hottest teams in baseball, rather than this is a serious problem and we need to do something, you know, drastically different in our approach.
25 years ago today, baseball went on strike, August 11th.
How about that?
1994. If Max Scherzer's back problems continue, the Nationals might as well just pack up and call it a season. What's the status of Max Scherzer?
So Max Scherzer threw a bullpen yesterday for the first time since hitting the IL for the second time with this mild rhomboid strain. And Dave Martinez said today that he felt good. And that's the most important part, because Scherzer doesn't feel discomfort or any pain when he throws. It's all about building up his back strength, basically, to sustain him through those throws. And obviously, you know, on the mound, he's such an intense competitor. He doesn't really feel it too much, he said. So when he, you know, gets back, when he later after the start, when he wakes up the next morning, that's the concerning part. So right now, he feels okay. He's going to throw again today. Dave Martinez said he thinks he's off tomorrow. And then if all goes well, which is a pretty big caveat there, just in how many stops and starts we've had to this saga, Scherzer will throw a sim game on Tuesday, and they'll evaluate from there. But that is sort of the latest on Max Scherzer.
If there's a sim game on Tuesday back here at Nationals Park, because of the amount of time that he's missed, does Max have to do like a rehab start or something like that? Or can they just, you know, if everything goes okay from the sim game, and maybe there's another step in between that, between another start, or meaning can he just rejoin the rotation, or does he have to go out on some sort of one start rehab because of how long he's missed?
We asked Davey this yesterday, and he sort of was, you know, he couched it a little bit. He said, I don't know. We're going to have to evaluate after the sim game, but it did sound like a possibility. In no way, you know, do I want to make it seem like that's something that's definite, but I do know that, you know, they're considering it at least because he has taken so much time. And, you know, even if you could throw him out there on a start and say, okay, give us 50 pitches and we'll, you know, get to the rest of the game with a bullpen, I don't know if that's something that they would consider, but it does sound like Max Scherzer's biggest concern is building up strength in his back to get through these starts.
So you would guess that they're considering having to send him out on a rehab start. Not that they will, but that is certainly an option, as opposed to the last time when he came back where he just jumped right back in against Colorado.
Right. In my sense is that that's an option, and, okay, and they'll kind of evaluate after the same game.
Sam, thank you very much for your time. Hopefully you can enjoy a good Nathan's hot dog out there, maybe a Knish or something with some golden spicy brown mustard at Citi Field. Hopefully they treat you better than they're treating the Nationals.
Thank you, Sam.
you set that off right now. I'm about to go grab lunch, and that sounds like a good option.
Attaboy. Okay. Attaboy. There's nothing like a good Nathan's hot dog, some spicy brown mustard, and a Knish. Oh, that brings me back to the days of my youth. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate
it. Thanks,
Sam. Sam 40 AM, Washington Post, joining us here. Jester, I can't get... Oh, there. I just got rid of him. that was a good spot.
Yeah.
How about that, Matt? I mean, I was kind of thinking that. I mean, there's been, like Sam said, so many start, stop. So many ups and downs. We got a long way to go before we can even feel reasonably good that Max is even close to starting. Not that he's going to start... And if we can get through that, I mean, just using this timeline, if he's not going to throw a simulated game until Tuesday, if all goes well out of that, Tommy, and even if he doesn't have to go for a minor league rehab, like a one-start minor league rehab, I mean, we're probably looking at no earlier than, I would think, next Saturday or Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
At the
no
earliest.
Earlier.
No.
Yeah.
No earlier than that. And if he does have to go for a rehab start, boy, they'll be licking their chops in Potomac or Harrisburg.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A Max Scherzer start, they'll fill the place up
for that. But if he's not available until next weekend for the big club at the earliest, right? I mean, and again, it's the way I see it, he's going to have to make a rehab start. I could be wrong on that, but that's what I would do. I mean, what we're probably looking at is, again, next weekend is what, the 17th and 18th?
It's the Brewers, right?
Right. So the Brewers. But he pitched the one game against Colorado, which lasted like 5 1/3 or 5 2/3, or maybe it was 6 even. And his start right before the All-Star break was July 6th. So essentially, I know they did get the one start, so it's not true. But essentially, they've gone from July 6th or right before the All-Star break through at least August 17th or 18th, at least, with one start. And it wasn't even a great one for Max Scherzer, essentially with nothing from Max Scherzer.
Yeah, and they've did it.
And still leading the wild card.
Thanks to the starts by Anibal Sanchez.
Yeah.
And one big start from Joe Ross.
Well, one and a half.
One and a half. Actually, you're right.
Because he walked five, so that's why we dock him a little bit. But he only gave up one hit, no runs.
No, you're right. You're right.
So it's an it. But that's a long time to go without.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Out your stud. And as dominant as Max was.
Yeah, I know.
And right, they're still leading the wild. Yeah, right? They're still leading the wild
they're
card
still
by
the
half
card,
game,
yeah.
Right? So, I mean, you know, all things considered, that's a positive.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But I guess the question would be is if you had a better bullpen and if they had invested more in their bullpen, if they believe more in bullpen investment as opposed to treating it like trade, you know, shopping at the Dollar Tree.
But what about everybody else, Chris?
Well, the Yankees don't have as many problems as the Nats, the Braves, and the Mets. And I mean, Aroldis Chapman is a wild card. You never know whether he's going to be a. But I mean, they've invested in Adam Ottavino and Dylan Betances, who I know has been injured. You know, the Yankees forever. I mean, they built a dynasty. Everybody thinks that the Yankees built the dynasty based on, you know, Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter alone. Well, there was Jeff Nelson and Mike Stanton. And I mean, they've always believed in shortening a game to six.
Right.
So, you know, they've had
okay,
that.
So you picked the one team.
I know. I'm using that. Kansas City was really good out of the bullpen a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
Milwaukee was really good out of the bullpen last
year. Because that's the way low-budget teams can win in the postseason.
I know.
What about their start and pitching?
That's fair. I mean, you know, I'd rather have good starting pitching than supposedly dominant starting pitching and have a good to pretty good bullpen, meaning balance throughout my starting pitching and my bullpen, than heavy starting pitching and Dollar Tree bullpen.
I don't know. Once you get to the playoffs, it's all about starting pitching.
How come that hasn't helped the Nationals?
What? Well, I might want to point out that the last time they played against the Cubs, Scherzer only made one start.
Right.
Scherzer was hurt. The
right.
year before that, against the Dodgers, no Steven Strasburg. He was out for the series.
That's true.
So
that's true. I mean, yeah, and Gio Gonzalez was certainly terrible, but
yeah. So they have not had the 1-2-3 punch that they've got now going into the playoffs.
I don't trust Corbin in a big spot, though.
Oh, I do.
I don't. He's given up 7 home runs in 30 innings at Citi Field, which is not a hitter's-friendly ballpark.
I get that. But home runs when there's nobody on base is minimal damage.
That's a fair point. All right, back in a flash to wrap things up. We got to get to some leftovers, some things that we haven't touched on. Take you up till Nats on Deck. Charlie and Dave standing by at Citi Field in New York. All right, final 10 minutes of the radio showgram on this Sunday afternoon now as we take you up to Nats on Deck. Charlie and Dave standing by Citi Field in New York. Thanks to Sam Fortier, again, of the Washington Post, WashingtonPost.com, for joining us from Citi Field as the Nats look to avoid the sweep today, Tommy, before they head home tomorrow night. The Cincinnati Reds in town today. Anibal Sanchez, who is looking for win number 8 in a row and has only made one start against the Mets rather this year, and that was the injury. That was the game that he got injured in, and he lasted a little bit more than an inning. And since then, he's been very, very, very good. Again, looking for win number 8 in a row. He'd started, 0-5 or 0-6 or whatever it was. He was terrible before that. Now he's
Want to point out that when I came back from spring training, and I had to basically say I was wrong early in the season. Now I can say I'm right. I told Nationals fans the one guy you're going to be surprised about is Anibal Sanchez.
Surprised in a good way.
In a good way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he reminded me of Leivon Hernandez in his heyday. about 15 different pitches.
Yeah.
At all kinds of different speeds. I mean, very, very smart, difficult pitcher to get a read on.
Have you talked to Rizzo about that comparison at all? Or,
no,
or
I haven't. No.
I'd be curious to see what he says, because I mean, obviously Rizzo was here and,
yeah,
and involved
here.
in
yeah.
Levo and,
yeah.
and whatever. I'd be curious, because I've heard you say that several times, and I think somebody else has made that, but I've heard that from you, and
yeah.
I don't disagree, but I'd be curious from somebody that actually like knows a lot more about baseball than me.
Barry Bonds used to say that Levon Hernandez was one of his favorite pitchers. Because they were teammates for a while in the Giants, then it, and then he faced them,
right.
and he was in Washington, and it was because you never knew what he was going to throw.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
couldn't guess against Levon.
Right. Because if you're certainly a one pitch pitcher like Doolittle, for the most part, you pretty much know what's coming. It's just a matter of location and whether you can do
you
it.
You didn't know that with Levo.
Most relievers even have at least two pitches. Most, not all. Certainly, starters usually have at least three pitches that they can count on. Some have four. With Levo and seemingly with Sanchez, you know, you have 12 different varieties. It's almost like a dozen.
You got about four or five pitchers with another five or six variations on them.
I haven't seen the Mets lineup yet, you know, but on a Sunday afternoon after a couple of emotional wins, it would not surprise me if they are whiffing and whiffing and whiffing and just like, you know, flailing at Sanchez's stuff. Now, again, he can get you six good innings, and and you can have the lead. That doesn't necessarily mean...
Right, that hasn't been the problem.
Right.
The starters have not been the problem up there. What also hasn't been the problem for the Mets is the support of the home fans
exactly.
there.
Exactly. So I got in trouble last night on Twitter when I compared the Met City Field crowd to basically an English Premier League soccer crowd. You know what I was trying to get at there, right? I mean, it's loud, it's raucous, it's, you know, they're all wearing their stupid Hawaiian shirts, and, you know, they're jumping up and down from the minute they're making all, maybe not an EPL crowd, but you get the point that I was trying to go for. It was a juiced-up, energetic crowd right from the get-go, Friday night, Saturday night, and it only got louder and more crazy and more hectic as the Mets were hitting home runs and tying up games and taking the lead and winning games, so on and so forth. Now, a lot of people have said, not just me, boy, it would be great. Nationals players, Steven Strasburg alluded to it. Boy, it'd be great if the Nationals crowd is like this, you know, when we get back home, or maybe when the Mets come back in, or you know, they've made kind of inferences. First of all, again, this is going to get me in trouble because people got mad at me because we work for the Nationals flagship state. There's no chance in hell that the crowd tomorrow night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, next weekend, is anything close to what we've seen the last two nights. And I don't even know, and this was what got me in trouble, when the Mets come back here, or when the Phillies come back here, Tommy, do you expect the crowd to be like it has been the last two nights?
No.
In September or late August?
No, it's just not that kind of crowd.
Right.
You're right.
I mean, it was for one night this year when Bryce came back.
Yeah, but it's not that kind of crowd. But yeah, look, you didn't compare the Nats crowd to the Mets crowd, did you?
No.
Okay. I mean,
I guess I took a little shot at them, right?
Well, why?
Because I said when the Mets come back.
Oh, okay.
You know, when the Mets come back, there'll be 10,000 Mets fans.
But there will be.
I mean, yes, I was speaking the truth. I've been at a lot of those games.
Yes, there will be. But part of the, I mean, it's not an apt comparison because the Mets have a tradition of baseball that goes back a century,
right,
to the Dodgers and the Giants,
right,
and the Mets are their colors are the Brooklyn Dodgers,
right,
and the New York Giants colors.
Right. Long before the Mets came into existence, is what you're talking about because of the National League Baseball and Brooklyn Dodger connection.
Yeah,
right.
So basically, we're talking about a city and an organization that's been basically a standard in that city.
Mm-hmm.
On and off for almost 100 years.
But they've been somewhat dormant for the last 2.5 years since really, you know, they went to the World Series and then I think they made the playoffs in 2016.
That's momentary things. I'm talking about building a foundation.
Yeah, yeah.
The Mets have a foundation
that will
awaken quickly.
Yes.
The Nationals are too young and they have an organization that's been reluctant to build a foundation. They have people who show up for games.
Right.
But the foundation that you need, they don't have that.
Well, how
yet.
Do you build that, though?
Well,
I mean, is it just time?
Part of it takes time. Part of it is it takes aggressive, smart marketing. The two things that learners don't do.
I've heard you say that. So is there one thing, when you talk about aggressive, smart marketing, is there one thing that the learners can do that they're not doing that comes right to the top of your mind?
Well, first of all, I mean, the losing teams that they had when they took over, I mean, the 100 lost teams, mm-hmm. they'll tell you that was the plan. And I'll tell you that what one Nationals executive told me when they opened up Nats Park in 2008, nobody plans to lose 100 games when you open a new ballpark. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the plan. It's because learners didn't want to spend the money early. They wanted to build the way they did. So it was important for them to recognize the momentum of 2005 when they took over in 2006
mm-hmm.
and continue to put competitive teams mm-hmm. on the field.
But they wanted to kind of build from scratch.
Right. So they wasted that opportunity. The other opportunities is they have virtually no off-season events or programs. In other words, they have had an opportunity, and every team in this town has had the opportunity, and the Capitals have taken advantage of it. The Redskins have been on the decline for decades mm-hmm. now, and there's been an opportunity to jump into that vacuum, and the Nationals have wasted it. They're invisible during football season. They don't do anything except for their fan fest.
Right.
And that's for the first couple years, they did it at Nats Park because they were too cheap to rent the convention center.
Back at Nats Park last year.
They said it was because of a scheduling conflict. Yeah. I'm very suspect of that. So that's another thing. And here's a small little thing,
mm-hmm.
very tiny thing, but it's symbolic. You walk into most bars, sports bars, around the DMV when there's a Nats game on,
not on
TV.
Yeah,
not on TV. So I suggested years ago, I said, you get a couple of interns and you create a team and you send them around to different sports bars around the area, and you send them there with 100 tickets,
yeah.
and you say, and you find the bar manager,
yeah.
and you say, here's 100 tickets. You can do with them whatever you want, but you have to make sure that when the Nationals are on,
yeah.
they're on TV here right. all the time.
Right.
That's one little way doing it.
I would agree. I mean, I don't know if that ultimately solves everything, but
it speaks to the way that the organization does business with no vision and not aggressive enough.
And you think that's just largely because of money? Because meaning
doing more marketing costs money or giving away
free tickets?
I don't think the tickets matter that much. I think it's because you have a family that is stuck in the 19th century that doesn't understand the value of marketing. There are people that don't understand the value of marketing. The Redskins don't understand of marketing.
Well, they started last year, and then they fired those guys.
And they fired the guy. So my point is, in this day and age where perception is reality, marketing's more important than ever.
I wouldn't disagree with that. Tom, as always, a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, boss.
Hanging in there with that raspy throat
Rough weekend for me.
Thanks to Craig Hoffman. Thanks to Sam Fortier. Thanks to everyone who listened, and I'll just say this as we sign off, get ready for Nats on Deck. Thanks to Jim Jester as well. Rest in peace, Joe White. We'll miss you all forever, and we thank you for your contributions and for being the person that you were. Rest in peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.